Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:22 p.m. and that is Central Time, and today is December 13th. Well, we've definitely had a risk-off attitude taken on by markets today, and Ethereum broke down through 4,000. So this is now pulling back into the underlying range, and we've had a distinct uptick in volatility over the course of the last month. So certainly pulling back towards the region of the 200-day moving average, and that represents where the sequence of higher reaction lows has been evident over the course of the last 6 or 7 months. So rather imperative that that level hold now that it is pulled back. But this is also a failed upside break, and we've had, you can see very clearly on the weekly chart, that there has been a lot of volatility. So this is, I think, emblematic of the risk-off attitude that markets are taking on right now. And Bitcoin has also continued to weaken, and it's now pulling back once more from the 50,000 level. It's right in the region of the moving average, simple moving average. And this is another closing low for the price. And it's also pulling back into the underlying range. So this is another trend inconsistency. And also a failed upside break above the 60,000 level, which was also capped with a downside key reversal. And the one thing that I think is important to highlight about the cryptocurrencies is that they do tend to trade reliably on chart reading, because there are no fundamentals. And a lot of it has to do with momentum and perception. So one of the things that people pay attention to are the chart patterns. And when you start to see inconsistencies coming through, well, then that is representative of the imbalance between supply and demand altering. And then that does alter the chart as well. So then when we think about the NASDAQ, well, we're coming back down again to test the lows that were put in last week, and then potentially the region of the upper side of the underlying range. Now, I think it's rather interesting to look at point and figure charts. And when we think about what that might mean, well, point and figure charts take away some of the time factors, and they also tend to smooth out some of they smooth out some of the smaller pullbacks. So then we can see in a more well-defined manner what the trend in fact looks like. And I'm trying to open my own website here, and then we can take a look at some of those charts, because when we think about what we might anticipate next, well, looking at the consistency characteristics of the trend in point and figure, well, it's just another way of looking at the same kind of information, but perhaps it gives us some additional insight. And one thing that we can see very clearly, this is 5 years of data, and over the course of the last year, we've had a big uptrend, and the price has more than doubled. And in that time, there's only been one instance when the trend pulled back into the underlying range, and that was in June. And right around this period here, it was just a 3-day pullback, or an extended pullback, and then it rebounded really very sharply. So now that we haven't had a sufficiently large rally to turn the price chart around yet, and since the box size is 238 points, then we would certainly need to see more on the upside in order to confirm support. And if it pulls back into the underlying range, well, as long as it's only one unit of scale, and then we get a sharp rebound again like we did last week, at the beginning of last week, well, then nobody's going to be all that worried. On the other hand, if it starts to pull back in a more deep fashion and pulls back into the underlying range, well, then that's a major trend inconsistency. And it's going to then open up the potential that we're looking at a longer period of consolidation. Now, when we look at some other instruments, the Russell 2000, for example, has got a very clear failed upside break. And then it came straight back down and tested the lower side of the range, and then it rebounded, but now it's pulling back again. So we have this incredibly sharp advance at the beginning of the year, and then subsequently, for just about all of this year, it hasn't really done anything at all. It's just been going sideways, and we're coming back down towards the lower side of that range right now. When we think about the S&P 500, well, it's sort of a mix between the two. So the S&P has got smaller ranges, and then it did rebound really emphatically last week, and now it's it hasn't quite pulled back by 3 units of scale yet. That'd be a pullback of 153 unit points. But as long as it's holding the low put in December, well, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. These are still consistent trends. But, of course, the big point right now is that we have bond yields that are coming down. The 10-year yield was down 6 basis points today, and this is despite the fact that the economists are pricing in the potential that we're going to have 7 interest rate hikes within the next 3 years, that there might be 2 next year, 3 the year after, and 2 the year after that. And against that background, bond yields are compressing. Well, one can only conclude that bond investors, they're basically pricing in that if the Fed were, in fact, to go ahead and do that, they'd cause a recession. And instead, it's much more likely that they're going to, if they do go ahead and accelerate the tapering, and of course, that is the reason why the liquidity magnets like Bitcoin, Ethereum, and the NASDAQ 100 are susceptible to some additional weakness. It's because if they do go ahead and accelerate the taper, well, it's going to start siphoning that liquidity out of the market. So it's then rational that the most interest rate sensitive portions of the market will experience pain first, and then that we'll see a broader spectrum experience of pain across the rest of the market. So we can look at companies like Amazon, which is right on the cusp of a market cap of $3 trillion. And $3 trillion is an awful lot of money for a company that makes phones. So this is, I think, a rather extraordinary valuation. And there is no question that the price has accelerated higher over the course of the last couple of months. And this is against a background where they have told the market that they're going to sell fewer phones this quarter, and that they're having trouble sourcing chips, and that some of the demand for phones is starting to ebb. And yet the price continues to rise. So there's certainly something else going on here, and it's obviously that there's a lot of demand, and that people are being funneled into these large cap companies. So breadth in the market has deteriorated. Now, it did recover somewhat last week, but if the Federal Reserve does in fact start to remove liquidity, well, then it's going to start to have an impact on some of the most interest rate dependent companies. And I thought it was particularly interesting today that on a day where the Biden administration released plans to boost the number of charging stations in the USA from 100 to 500,000, from 100,000 to 500,000, then some of these charging companies were only up modestly, and in fact they spent most of the day in negative territory. So this is, I think, an example that in order for these companies that are loss-making to get to a point where they can make money, there's an interval. And in that interval, they rely on access to liquidity that's virtually free. And provided they have access to it, then they can survive until they get to a point where they can become revenue positive. But if liquidity evaporates in that time, then they're going to run into trouble. So then we can also think about companies that comprise the kinds of funds that did well last year. And the ARK Innovation Fund continues to sustain the breakdown, and it was in negative territory again in here today. So this is increasingly looking like a completed top formation, and it has a lot of interest rate sensitivity. And then, of course, we have the continued relative strength of oil prices, and oil may start to come back down again if we start to see more fears about the economic expansion because of the withdrawal of liquidity. So that's unlikely to be something that worries people. But as we head deeper into winter, the natural gas price in Europe closed at a new high today. Now, obviously, there was a day in October when prices were substantially higher than this for a very brief period of time. But now the breakout's been sustained, and it's a very similar move for the Dutch future as well. So we're definitely seeing a gas shock hitting Europe. So when we think then about what that means, well, the last thing that the Europeans want to do is strengthen the currency, and they're not going to raise rates, and they're trying to deal with this challenge of extremely high natural gas prices. But and because they have such wide negative real interest rates, and they can't raise rates, and they can't do much to combat inflationary pressures, well, then gold is looking like a well-supported move, that it broke out, it pulled back to test the upper side of the range that persisted for a year, and now it's firming once more. And I thought the other rather significant move today was in the performance of platinum compared to palladium. So it's broken up and out of this little range that's been forming for the last year, but it's more broadly, it's part of a longer term base formation. And palladium was a key beneficiary of the collapse in platinum, the demand for catalytic converters, and then the slowdown in the production of palladium because of the low price of nickel. But if demand for electric vehicles increases, then that's not great news for palladium. And palladium increasingly is looking like a completed top formation. So this is certainly looking like a rather dire situation, and there is ample scope for it to give up all of the advance that it put in from the lows in 2016. So there's certainly scope here for additional downside in palladium. When we think about what's likely in terms of assets, well, continued demand for US Treasuries, the relative strength of the US dollar, and then the stability of gold. Well, all of that is contributing to this risk-off environment. And then when we think about the performance of stock markets elsewhere, the Euro stocks was also in mildly negative territory today. So it's likely that we're going to come back down and test the region of the trend mean again. And on Wednesday, we're going to find out exactly what the Federal Reserve has planned. So they might surprise the market, and we might see another rebound this week. But we pretty much have to see a rebound again this week, or we're going to start to look like a very much more volatile environment. And we've been going up for quite a while already, and we haven't had a medium-term correction in a while. And medium-term corrections can last for anything from 6 to 18 months. And generally, when we've seen pullbacks, well, one thing that I think is potentially interesting, or I think is relevant here, is that when we overlay the performance of the S&P 500 with the total assets of central banks. that's not working. But when we look at this trend, what we are very clearly given is a very clear view that when asset prices rise, it's due to monetary factors. So we've had this extraordinary advance in the total assets of central banks over the course of the last year. And then on top of that, we've seen asset prices accelerate even faster. So when the total assets of central banks increases by 50%, stock markets double. And of course, they don't increase the size of the balance sheets by that magnitude unless there's a problem. So then it's easier for the stock market to double because it's coming from depressed levels. But then we can also think about a number of times when the total assets prices went sideways. So it went kind of sideways in 2012, but it didn't really stop going up. But it did stop going up in 2014 and 15, and the market went through a very choppy period of time. And then it went down in 2018 and 19, and then we had a 10% pullback, a 20% pullback, and then we started to come out of it. And then, of course, we had the pandemic, so we had a much bigger pullback. And then we had the 50% increase in the total assets of central banks, and the stock market more than doubled. So if the Federal Reserve is going to stop with this quantitative easing program, and the ECB and Japan persist with theirs, but their currencies continue to go lower, well, then on an aggregate basis, then the chances are that the total assets of central banks are going to stop rising, and there's certainly been a loss of momentum over most of 2021. So that would suggest that we could be looking at a more volatile environment overall. And if that's the case, well, then the most levered parts of the market are likely to perform least well. And then I think it's also particularly relevant to pay attention to high yield spreads because they've been inert for an awfully long time, but they are starting to steady and they're hovering now around the 300 basis point level. So you don't really have to worry about high yield spreads until they're trending through 500 basis points. And then the yield curve spread continues to contract, and it's down now to 78 basis points. So it's increasingly looking like it has peaked. It's pricing in the potential that interest rates are going to rise. I remain very much of the view that within this cycle, the peak in interest rates is going to be lower. They're unlikely to be able to raise rates more than 100 basis points, by which time it'll be well priced in, and we'll have an inverted yield curve. So this ratio is coming in really very quickly. So in order for this bull market to persist, we're going to have to see additional new sources of liquidity coming through. Well, China is certainly a potential source of liquidity, and they're beginning to price in additional fiscal stimulus next year. But the Nasdaq is starting to experience some selling pressure, and the Hang Seng is barely holding on. So when we look at this over a longer term basis, well, there's been a sequence of higher reaction lows that's been holding for an awfully long time. And then if the Hang Seng breaks downwards, well, that's going to be emblematic of a lot of risk off action for China. And it might accelerate the pace with which the Communist administration are willing to step on the fiscal gas pedal. But they're not doing it yet. And then, of course, with the significant advance in natural gas prices, Europe is looking at inflationary pressures, and they can't raise rates. And they may be forced to stimulate even further. So they might have to start to try and address the stagflationary environment by stimulating even more. And of course, that would help asset prices, and it would put downward pressure on the euro at the same time, even though it is a little bit oversold in the short term. And this is the kind of environment which should be beneficial to gold, because the options that are open to central banks are to print more. And if they don't print more, they're looking at valuations starting to contract. And that's not really something that anyone's particularly interested in. Now, one might argue that the Biden administration isn't nearly as concerned about the stock market as the Trump administration was. But generally, when the stock market goes down and constituents start complaining, well, then politicians wake up to trouble in the stock market rather quickly. And I think we're in a rather tense environment, which is why I decided to reopen short positions in here today, because I think having some downside protection is probably not a bad idea. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.